With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better, and welcome to the final week of our Halloween countdown, King versus King. In the red corner, we're off to Derry, Maine, where evil lurks in the sewers in the form of a child-eating clown called Pennywise, played by Tim Curry. And that completes this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference. It's only the second made-for-TV movie we've ever done, but it'll be worth it. From 1990, we're talking the miniseries of It.
Hi, Georgie. You're not real!
Was it Pennywise?
Big white guy, red nose.
About 75 feet tall, mouth full of razor sharp teeth.
Losers fight it. Losers die.
They all flow!
While in the blue corner, wouldn't you know it, we're back in Derry, but this time it's getting the big screen treatment. Some things never change though, and Pennywise the Dancing Clown is back, with Bill Skarsgård now filling the oversized shoes. We hope you enjoyed all 8 hours of your homework, because it's going up against the 90-hour miniseries from 2017 and 2019. It's the 5 hours of It, Chapters 1 and 2.
Derry's not like any town I've ever been in before. People die or disappear 6 times the national average. And that's just grown-ups. Kids are worse. Way, way worse.
Bill, if you'll come with me, you'll float too. You'll float too. You'll float too. You'll float too. You'll float too.
Did that make sense?
I'm not sure it did, but keep going.
So, what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Good start. Strong start. Hello, Clash Putters. Excuse me, sir. Do you have Prince Albert in a can? You do? Well, you better let the poor guy out then. Aha!
I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both?
All right.
All right.
All right. Good.
Yeah.
We made it.
What, to this?
To the final.
Sure.
The final of our countdown to Halloween, our world famous countdown to Halloween, King versus King. It's here. It's the big one. It's the one we were always building up to. At least I knew we were. We all knew we were. It's here.
Come on, guys.
I have some trepidation, though.
I'm nervous, too, actually.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And then everything's got the same plot. And I'm so confused as to what happens in which. And it's a lot, basically.
Agreed. I was writing notes and I was like, I've forgotten which movie this is in. There are shot for shot, like very, very, very close similarities.
18 well, pages of notes.
Is a remake of the other. So that will happen.
Yeah, I know. But like, you know, I mean, I swear the Georgie bit at the start of both. Anyway, look, we've got a lot. Let's not do it now.
Yeah, get on with it.
I'm getting on with it, mate. I'm getting on with it. All right. All right. So these were my choices. Why? Because where better to finish a month of King with one of his most terrifying creations ever, Pennywise the Dancing Clown. The 1990 miniseries was one of the scariest things I remember watching as a kid, while simultaneously absolutely loving it. So I wanted to revisit that. And obviously, It Chapter One is the highest grossing horror movie of all time. And you can't not do it with It Chapter Two. Mainly, I thought this one was probably going to be one of the strongest pairings in terms of connections.
Sure.
Yeah?
I think you're right.
I think this is a really strong pairing.
Yeah.
I think they really connect to each other. This is the climax then of our world-famous Halloween countdown. And I'm just thrilled that you've been here for the journey. I am excited to put horror behind me for a while. As I said, the dreams have got worse. I woke up screaming the other night. I'm having actual anxiety dreams. So the clue I gave last week, there will be an obligatory mention. Already ticked that box. Chris didn't follow that up on Twitter because
I'd put a picture of a clown.
Oh, all right. Well, you did follow it up on Twitter.
Because it's Stephen King's The Connection.
Right. So we're on Twitter at ClashPod. Also on Instagram at ClashPod. The guesses floated in to us down here. They all float. I only gave correct guesses this week. So you only get your name mentioned if you said It versus It or It 1990 versus It Chapter 1 and It Chapter 2. So it's very specific. It got very complicated on Twitter. Robert Farley, Matt Garrity, Simon Adams, Rhys Page, Mark Mead, Paul Logue and Nathan Drake all got the correct answer. But the winner, I think, because there were so many correct guesses, is Danny Baker. Congratulations, Danny. Your prize is a balloon. Oh, come on, bucko. Don't you want a balloon? And now for everyone going, possibly out there, It 1990 isn't an actual movie.
No one's going like that.
Someone might be.
No one cares.
Okay, well, just in case there is someone, let me point you in the direction of Chris's choice on episode 3, the TV movie The Toughest Man in the World from 1984, which means we're allowed to do pretty much anything.
Good. Can we do that one again?
Never. Absolutely not. So the connection section. I'll start. Pennywise the Clown.
I haven't written anything.
No, we agreed we weren't going to do one.
Yeah. So don't throw us under the bus.
I know. We agreed instead to discuss the thing in the world that scares us most. Mm-hmm. In preparation for Halloween, the thing that scares us most. Just before we each say ours, I'm going to guess at what I think yours are.
I think you know what mine is.
From previous experience. So for Victoria,
yep.
I'm saying moths.
There's a specific moth. I don't know its name because it's some sort of hell moth.
Like Harry or something. No, it's not one that lives in your house.
No, it would be dead by now. It's a giant moth and it feeds off the liquid in your, it feeds off your tear duct. So when it lands on you, it puts its little proboscis in your eye. That's my worst fear. It's a real thing.
You don't own enough expensive wool suits because let me tell you, a worse moth is just your regular everyday clothes moth.
He could have just said wool suits, but he put expensive wool suits.
I do actually have a wool suit in the house.
I went to put one on the other day and it had been devoured and it breaks my heart.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing. I've got the sticky things. I've got the moth bombs. And
moth balls?
No, mine are bombs.
Yeah, land on that bitch.
Yeah, exactly. The motion triggered. If a moth lands too near a suit, boom, goes off. Lost a lot of suits that way, but it's worth it. Chris, your biggest fear, correct if I'm wrong, is it getting film trivia wrong?
No.
Oh, what is it?
Robot Lady from Superman 3.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. Sorry.
That would be my it sort of...
Nightmarescape.
Exactly. Mm. Alex, what's yours?
You know what mine is.
Feet.
Shark's feet, someone not recognising you.
That's so weird.
Sharks with feet.
Sharks with feet!
Yeah, got it.
When evolution finally creates the land shark. Yeah. I actually did a bit of thinking about this. It's not just sharks. It's bobbing up and down in the ocean and not knowing what's below you.
Sure.
Here's my thinking. Psychology, GCSE level thinking. It's because if a lion runs at you on land... Mm-hmm. You still have that opportunity to go, and you'll die, no doubt, I'm sure, but you still have the opportunity to go, I'm going to make the decision to run that way or that way. But a great white breaching from below, there is no way of knowing it's coming, and that's what scares me because I'm a control freak.
Yeah, I miss it.
Cool, and I do think we've spent enough time talking about you and sharks.
Mm, I agree. I agree.
I don't need any more explanation.
Do you want to go shark diving at some point?
Well, with you, yes.
Right then, on Thursday, Chris is visiting Derry in glorious HD, which means today Vicky gets the honour of being our first guide round the sewer system and showing us her deadlights. V takes on journey.
I never had any friends like the ones I had when I was 12. Jesus, does anyone? Well, yeah, Richard Dreyfuss in another Stephen King story of childhood bonds and fears. I do, actually. But that's because I didn't make them battle the Eater of Worlds with scrap metal and an inhaler, which is what young Bill does to his friends, the Losers Club, when a malevolent force, which principally takes the form of an evil clown because Tim Curry is amazing, reappears in Derry, Maine, as part of a 30-year cycle to eat all the kids and give everyone nightmares forever. But they didn't kill it, did they? Because of the aforementioned lack of weapons. And so now grating adult versions of these sweet kids go at it again, still with no proper weapons, and then literally tear it apart with their bare hands and I think excavate its heart using its own spidery limbs to crack open its own exoskeleton. Turns out 20 years of repressed anger and paralysing fear is more deadly than an inhaler. Who knew?
Excellent.
Thanks.
They are some of the worst dressed adult characters in TV
Don't start that ponytail!
This will make you feel better. I had that look when in 1990 when I first saw It. I've told you, I wore a baseball cap, but I had a ponytail, but I didn't want long hair. Mm. And so I looked cool with a baseball hat on, took it off. Ponytail with a mullet.
It's egregious. It's vile. I absolutely hate it.
The problem is that character is clearly Stephen King in this Bill.
Yeah.
You're looking at him going, surely, I mean, you'd have gone, no, just that, no, make him, just not that. I don't think Stephen King's ever had that haircut.
I think he probably has.
He has a bad haircut. I've never seen him with a ponytail.
So the history, I mean, I wonder if you're the same. I've never seen this until this week because I've avoided it for, what is it now, 30 years.
Yeah.
Because when I was at school, my friend Leslie, she was terrified of clowns, absolutely, but terrified of all clowns, to be fair. But she really fancied Jonathan Brandis a lot. Like, we were really little. We were like 10 or 11 or something.
Which one's Jonathan Brandis?
He's young Bill.
Okay.
So we tried to watch it and she was just inconsolable. Like, we couldn't get past the storm drain scene like a lot of people. Mm. So then I was like, nope, yeah, you're right. Clowns are scary, it turns out. And so I've never, ever been near it. But I did read it after Leslie refused to watch it because I wanted to know what the fuss was about. And I've never seen any of it until in the week.
This is your first watch?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Because I was so scared.
Of the storm drain thing is, yeah, we'll get to it. Okay, cool. Well, mine is that I watched it in 1990 whenever, I think it was, I don't know whether it was on TV here or someone had a VHS.
It was on the BBC, I found out, but not till 94.
Okay, no, it's way before then. So someone must have had a VHS of it when it was released as a whole movie, and I watched it, and like I said, just the scariest thing I'd ever seen. The bit in the drain. I mean, we'll go through all the scenes that fucked me up as a kid, but the minute his face changes in that drain, I was both sold on it, like, I have to now watch this because I have to see that die because it's so scary. Amazing. I loved it. Chris?
Yeah, I was too scared to watch it when I was younger. So I saw it. I saw most of it for the first time about 5 years ago, but I did fall asleep.
Right, yeah.
And then I went back to it a few weeks later and finished it. And my takeaway was, oh, that Tim Curry's good. I want to start a podcast in 3 years where we keep talking about him.
I know we haven't got time. How did we end up talking about Tim Curry all the time?
Because he's... Because
can't remember.
It will have been. It will have
it
been.
It was because of Congo, but then it.
Oh, yeah, Congo was the first time we talked about him. And then I think off the back of that, we immediately started talking about Pennywise.
Because Mark was asking me to explain myself, and I was like, I actually can't, which is disappointing. I don't know why we talk about Tim Curry. Apart from me, obviously, he's brilliant, but there's this, he doesn't listen to the podcast. So there's this running joke in quote marks in the podcast about Tim Curry. And he was like, why? And I was like, because, no, I don't know, actually. Forgotten. The passage of time. Oh, well.
Herman Homolka.
Try explaining that to Mark. That's, you get no laughs there. I was like, he's really funny in Congo.
I think if Mark found out about Congo, he'd lose his shit. He'd be like, that has replaced valuable information about Suspiria in my head.
Okay, so there's a lot. I mean, I've got a lot of background. I wonder if I'm going to do all of it. No, I'll tell you what, you're interested, aren't you?
Just, fuck yes.
I feel really... nervous. I don't know why. It's such a funny thing because it's not like it's that convoluted or anything or particularly fascinating.
Did you read the book?
When I was younger, yeah, I did.
All right, so you read all 1,138 freaking pages of that thing.
There's some key scenes that I'd forgotten, which I wonder if you know what they are.
I certainly do.
But either I was too young to understand what was going on or was at that age like, no, I don't think so, Stephen King, nice try, but no. All right, so... as we have established, just to set the scene, this is a 1992 part miniseries adapted from a book of 1986 by Stephen King. It was adapted by Lawrence D. Cohen. He'd done Carrie. But here we go. So the book, as you said, is massive.
Have I been saying 1990? Is it 92?
1992 part series.
Oh, sorry. Okay. 1992 part series. Got you. I just thought I'd been wrong for this entire time and it would have bothered me.
Bless you for asking now. Yeah. Anyway.
Carry on.
So... it's a massive book. Lawrence Cohen gets it from his agent. He's like, I thought they'd sent me two by mistake, like two manuscripts, because it's ginormous. So they're talking about adapting it for ABC. There's a lot of discussions about an 8-hour format, a 10-hour format, and eventually a 4-hour format was settled on. But at one point, George A. Romero was going to direct it. And now he was more interested in the 8 to 10-hour version because of what you can do. So there's a lot of like backstage shenanigans, but basically once we're on 4 hours, because ABC were a bit freaked out about the material and about how long everybody wanted it to be, George is gone because we're at 4 hours. So then we get Tommy Lee Wallace, who, credit fans, was associate art editor on Dark Star. Yay!
He's had a few shows on Clash Pod. Dark Star, Halloween, The Fog. He was one of Carpenter's boys.
We've never done Halloween. Have we?
He's the shape.
What?
No, he's not. That's Nick Castle.
In another Halloween, he's the shape.
Oh, does he? Is he? Oh, yes, he. Wait, is he?
Anyway, he's also in Carpenter's band, The Coupe de Villes, which I think you've seen them, haven't you? So that's quite nice.
Have we not done Halloween?
No.
Oh my God, I'm going insane.
Do you want to start again?
No, it's fine.
I'll carry on.
Do you know what 8.5 hours of it will do to your mind?
Yeah, dude, because I've had to watch it as well.
All right.
So yeah. Anyway, Tommy Lee Wallace is not quite convinced by... so we've got night one and night two. That's how Cohen decides to sort of condense these things. Wallace isn't convinced by the scripts for night two. Apparently, his version focused a lot on Bev's bad husband as like this big bad guy. Mm-hmm. So he gets a bit of a fleeting mention here and in 2019 version. But Cohen didn't... Wallace was like, can you rewrite it? And Cohen said, no, I'm busy. I don't want to. I'm over it. So Wallace does it himself. Now, this is where... I found this very interesting because I've read the book, but kind of promptly forgot everything apart from the giant spider and the sense of dread within the town itself, rather than in like the later versions where it's like a problem that these kids have got and these kids have got to sort out. Like in the 1990 version and the book, the town of Derry is bad, the town itself. Mm. The legacy for me is that one and two, and then consequently 2017 and 2019, they're so mawkish about friendship and togetherness and all the rest of it. And that is obviously all in the book, but in the book, there's more gore and scares and whatever. But in this version, the togetherness and the friendship is really front and center.
ABC, and that's why they cast a lot of non-horror related people. Like you've got John Ritter in there as the adult cast because ABC were like terrified that people were going to not watch it because it was going to be too ingrained in horror. And also they put it on. And this is just quite interesting because I didn't know what this was, but at the time, I don't know if they still do it, something called the November Sweeps.
Yeah.
Which is where they...
the Nielsen ratings.
Yeah. So they find it. So advertisers then go, wow, we're going to give you more money for your advert. So they wanted big names like John Ritter in it so that people would watch. And it did massively well.
It did really well. It got 30 million viewers, which I think is good for the US. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is.
It sounds good, doesn't it?
It sounds good.
But the thing is, is, there was a rule in TV at the time, I don't know if it's still a rule, but you cannot show kids in jeopardy. You just can't, like, otherwise it's not on the telly. So a lot of the jeopardy had to be implied with like reaction shots rather than showing something like super scary, super gory. So I think you end up with these very Stand By Me vibes, mm-hmm. which is not a bad thing. But it's just, it's not as true to the book in that sense, in that there's less gore and less sort of bloody scares and things like that. And then that's repeated again in 2017 and 2019, which is interesting because you could have gone back to the source because you're making a movie, making a feature, and you can basically do what you want.
Yeah, there's more gore though.
Yeah, there is. That's fair. So let's talk about casting because we're obviously just going to talk about Tim Curry. Although a small piece of Tilly Worth trivia, I think, Jonathan Brandis, who plays young Bill, who my friend Leslie really fancied.
I remember loving him in Sequest DSV.
Oh, he's really good in Sequest DSV.
Lucas.
Oh, memories.
Dead now.
I know.
Chris? Yeah, I know. Anyway, he's got a voiceover credit at the start of Pet Sematary. Did you know that?
I did. No. He does do the voiceover.
You didn't know! Yay! So it's worth double points.
What's he do?
You know, the kids are going, oh, you were such a great dog at the start of Pet Sematary. He's one of those
classic
kids.
Brandis.
The casting of the kids came after the casting of the adults to get a physical resemblance between the two sets of cast. I think that's quite funny. When you read reviews of the 1998, everyone slags off the adults and thinks the kids are amazing and thinks the adults are annoying. So anyway, back to Tim Curry as it. Oh, I know this is like a meme that goes around. Who is your Tim Curry? Where did you see Tim Curry first? Go.
Pennywise the Clown.
What about you?
Oh, I don't know.
So your choices are basically Wadsworth, Pennywise or Frankenfurter.
I've never seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Have you not?
So, no. It was because everyone had... There was a girl I really fancied at school and she'd seen it and like there was a crowd of them that always went to see it and I felt really excluded and I think I built up an animosity towards a film because...
Yeah, that's exactly like
she didn't fancy me.
Yeah.
And I didn't know when the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You're right. So it's all tied up.
It's all tied up in
that. Yeah, rather than just go and see it and then go and talk to her about it and be like, I've seen that too.
Or even watch it as an adult.
Yeah,
as
fuck her. I mean the film.
Yeah. If nothing, I can bear a grudge.
That's true.
Probably Legend.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to talk about Legend in a second, actually, Chris. That's really handy. I saw the Rocky Horror Picture Show before. Well, I've never seen it, but before I tried to watch it. Because, again, Leslie's mum was really into the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mm. So, for me, that made Pennywise now scarier. Because the journey for me from Frankenfurter to Pennywise, I don't think is as big a journey as you think. Because Frankenfurter is very playful and he's very in control and he wants something. It's like all these things are in the clown in that way, which made it a bit more terrifying.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. I think you're reaching.
Okay, fine.
And it was Annie. I tell a lie. Annie was the first
of
time
course,
I saw Tim Curry.
Of course.
I've got to get this right.
I can't believe I forgot.
What did I say his biggest fear was?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm trying to kill a podcast because
I can't get
it.
Facts about myself wrong. That would be super annoying.
So apparently also in the running was Malcolm McDowell or Roddy McDowell. Tim Curry didn't want to do it because of Legend, because he'd worn a ton of makeup in that.
Did you see that quote from Tommy Wallace where he said, I didn't want Malcolm McDowell because he's just too sweet. I'm like,
when?
Fucking what?
Now, wasn't that referring to Roddy McDowell?
Yes, it is. Because Roddy McDowell's got a sweeter face, I think.
Mm. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's easy to get. I mean, yeah, fair enough.
Then it does make sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because he's quite sweet. In Planet of the Apes, anyway.
He is.
So we'll talk about Bart Mixon, who did the makeup design. He worked with Rick Baker, your favourite, on Gremlins 2. He also worked on Pet Sematary, actually. And he used Lon Chaney's Phantom of the Opera as the inspiration. So I did like some, I'd looked into this because it is interesting. Like, I think a lot of people of our generation and maybe a lot of people generally just do find clowns very scary, but there are so many different types of clown, which I didn't quite realize. And Bart Mixon said they wanted Pennywise to look like a living cartoon, which is interesting. Because when you think about Bill Skarsgård later, he's more of like a sort of decrepit Victoriana clown. There's this thing in quote marks, hobo clown is another fucking scary ass clown. So they you can make these specific choices about what kind of scares you're going to get.
I wonder how the first clown ever came about. I mean, I wonder who went, yeah, this is funny and entertaining and not fucking terrifying.
Isn't it Commedia dell'arte? Isn't that where the, I think...
Look. Good.
Yeah, I think.
I worked with a picture editor whose job you would send over the features and they would find the pictures for your article for the magazine. And the one rule was we weren't allowed to send her any articles about clowns,
right?
Because she would not look for pictures of clowns. And then one day someone thought it'd be funny to write an article about a clown and send it to her with a picture of Tim Curry, saying, "Can you find me? I need a bunch of pictures for this." And you just heard this scream from the other side of the office and she started crying and you had to go over and like, it was really shocking. Wow, this is real.
That is what I get if someone sends me a picture of a foot. Oh,
next week, mate.
I did look inside myself to see why I'm scared of clowns, because there's the legend and there's Tim Curry's been in my brain for, you know, 30 years scaring me. But I think what bothers me about clowns is that they're very needy and I don't like that, like neediness. I know. But that, I'm being honest, like, why do I not like neediness? I suppose I just don't like, because when they do a trick at the circus, they're like, laugh, laugh. Mm. And you have to be like, oh, ha, ha, ha.
It's very try hard.
Yeah, I don't like it.
The only time I've ever been to a circus, my granddad once took me to a circus and a clown came over. Like, I think like I won a raffle or something. And the prize was a look-in annual.
Remember? Oh, lovely! Oh, yeah. Oh my God, I love it!
I've still got
it.
Some look-ins.
And this clown was that came to the front where I wasn't handed it to me, and I was like, "No, thank you." Taking that off that. Just someone reach. I'm a child. Reach for it and pass it to me. I'm not getting any closer to that.
That's what I mean. Mm.
But I think I, you know, when you just get a sense, I think the clown was really pissed off with me for not reaching for the book. Like it was like, I'm here, take the book. And I'm like, nope.
They also like hanging out with kids who aren't their own a bit more than I think is healthy.
Is necessary, yeah.
No, you can't have that. That's wrong. There are clowns, tend entertainers still working at kids' parties today that you're doing out of work with statements
who
like that.
Who books a clown these days? You see them when you go to the circus.
Yeah.
But nowadays you're like, oh, is the Frozen, is Elsa busy? Well, we just won't do it then. Yeah. Like, no one books a clown.
People make flippant remarks like that on podcasts and that's why people don't book clowns anymore.
That's right.
Don't book a clown, book a magician.
Magicians are even worse.
They can be.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie Chuckle wasn't.
Was he
did my birthday 3 years in a row. He was fantastic. And he never tried to touch me.
Oh, bless. You know when you came to my 40th, Marion, you know Martha's mum, she's so lovely. She thought there'd be loads of kids there. And she, because she's so nice, she's like, oh, I was thinking about getting a children's, like an entertainer for your party to keep the kids happy. And I was like, Marion, you really don't have to. She's like, I could only find a magician. And then she said, and I was worried he might try. And I was like, don't you dare book him. If that magician comes anywhere near me on my birthday, we will get thrown out of the pub.
Did he have new tricks every year, or were you just a simple child who was like, it's my favourite, it's the rabbit out of the hat, it's coming again, I know the rabbit's coming.
I can't remember.
Anyway, back to Tim Curry. You'll be interested to know, they started off with quite a lot of chin and cheek prosthetics, but eventually they just sacked that off and just put him in clown makeup and gave him some teeth.
Do you know why, though? I think this is really interesting. Curry says about this, he says that the prosthetics that they had at the start did too much work by itself, and he thought what was more interesting was the look in Pennywise's eyes when you know he's going to kill, and that's what he wanted to capture. And he said the prosthetics stopped that. And I think he was 100% right, because it is that moment. If he was hidden behind prosthetics, you know, sure, he's got the fangs in and the context in. But any more than that, and you would ruin those moments, which are the scariest moments, where he just suddenly changes and goes for the kids.
Yeah, he straddles Supernatural because he's got the enlarged head, but also a real person. You know, you don't have to have that big bulbous head. But then you've just got, like, it would seem more like a psycho, like a sort of a bad person rather than something from somewhere else. So as we said, there were patchy reviews, but it was the biggest success of 1990, 30 million viewers. Stephen King said his expectations were in the basement. But in 2017, he said he liked it and he thought the kids were great and he thought the adults were terrific. But
Bill's style was on point.
He said, yeah, it was a really ambitious adaptation of a really long book. But yeah, he likes it.
Did you find that old Fangoria interview that Tim Curry did on the set?
I did, yeah.
Did you hear that? There's just a wonderful bit of Tim Curry audio where he's asked about Pennywise and you hear him go, basically, he's just pure evil, really. And he can also metamorphosize into various other forms. I won't tell you what he turns into at the end, but basically, he's completely irredeemable. He's the kind of chap that's entirely without charm.
That's right.
Such a great Tim Curry.
What I remember from that interview was the sandwich that Tim Curry was eating.
Yeah.
Yeah, cream cheese and tomato.
I know.
That's weird. Because the tomato would like bleed into the cream cheese. Mm. I don't get it.
And it says, and he finished the sandwich and immediately sparked up a Marlboro. I don't know how true it is. It doesn't sound true, but apparently when any of the kids came over to bother him on set, he just did the fangs. He had the fangs and he'd go...
Go away. Yeah,
get
I'm
away
trying to eat
from
a sandwich.
Me. But on King... himself, Curry says, I always get the books. I mean, he's an extremely entertaining writer. I think he's really good at that stuff. I like The Shining a lot too. I would like to have done The Shining.
No, I'm sorry, but you can't.
Yeah, I don't know. I read that. I was like, Curry is Torrance. After seeing Pennywise, I'm like, is Jack Torrance? Yeah, maybe.
No.
Yeah, maybe.
No, I'm only saying no because it's too hard to imagine, but... You're not necessarily wrong. Mm. So that's all I have.
Final question. Lawrence Cohen, who wrote it, he also wrote The Tommyknockers, which I've always meant to watch. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. Because I know he did Carrie, obviously, but I've never watched the miniseries of The Tommyknockers. And I think because I like this miniseries so much, I'm always like, I wonder if it's any good.
Yeah.
Don't.
Okay.
Who's it got in it?
It's shite.
Okay.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think I heard that. I think that's why I've missed it.
All right then. So let's talk about the film then, shall we? The miniseries. The two-part miniseries.
Call it a film. It's a film. It's cinematic enough, in my opinion, to be a film.
Okay. I just want to quickly say that when the credits come up, it says special appearance by Tim Curry, which when I was 11, I was like, oh, he's not going to be in it very much, so that's fine. Makes it seem like a fleeting thing. He basically is this whole film.
He's not in it that much.
He's not in it that much.
It doesn't feel like that, though, does
it? I know
it
doesn't. That's because he's so fucking good.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do, right, obviously there's a difference between 2017 and 2019, whereas this miniseries flits between 1962 and 1990, sort of a bit more back and forth rather than the sort of, there is a clean division, but it's not as clean as later. So where we start is adult Mike is calling the grown-up Losers Club back to Derry. Broadly, the Losers Club, Bill, the Stephen King one, Richie, the funny one, Ben, the slightly chubby one, Mike, the outsider, Eddie, the ill neurotic one, Stan, the sensible one, Bev, the female one. Mm. That's your club.
Yeah. It's an interesting introduction to Bill, who, like I said, is Stephen King. I think Stephen King really does not like being interrupted when he's writing. Because you think about Jack Torrance, when Nancy's bothering him, he's like, I am trying to fucking write here.
Yeah.
And in this, Audra is going, Bill! Billy's like, in a fucking minute! In a minute! And she has cooked what looks like a very delicious and difficult to make meal. And I'm just going, King hates being interrupted.
I did laugh at the dinner because it's a sort of late 80s, early 90s marker of sophistication because it was asparagus. Yeah. It's like, oh, you must have some money.
I bet they were listening to Sade because they were on Hampstead Heath, weren't they? Because they cast kind of a movie star as his movie star girlfriend.
Yeah.
But they cast a movie star who can't act.
Oh, man.
Olivia Hussey is not a good actress.
I forgot she was in it. Olivia Hussey means a lot to me because of Romeo and Juliet at school.
Of course.
And I think you saw her boobs and no one could believe it and blah, 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 blah. So then I was like, well, she can act. She did Juliet. Like, that's not a walk in the park. Anyway, I don't know what happened between Juliet and here because it's bad.
It's bad.
I will say, the movie does not hide Tim Curry from the start. The first thing you actually see, even before this, is him in those sheets.
Yeah.
Little Laurie is on the tricycle. And even that tiny moment, because it switches, this movie does make incredible use of POV shots.
Yeah.
That bit where it just, like, you're not seeing him, you're seeing his point of view emerging from those sheets towards you, and she screams. Terrifying.
Really terrifying. So we talked about the ponytail. I mean, what more can we say? I hate it. There we go. And Bill remembers his little brother Georgie playing all alone with his toy ball and reaching a storm drain. So as I've said, when I was younger, this is as far as I got because this is fucking scary as you like.
Yep.
Like, storm drains are scary, and I don't know if that's because of this or because they just are. Who knows?
It's because of this.
It must be, mustn't it?
It is because of this.
Do we even have storm? We don't have, I don't know.
Things like, do we have storm? We don't really have storm drains
in London,
like that.
I don't know, like big old storm drains. I just don't feel like I've ever seen one, but and yet I'm scared of them.
It's because we have grates on them that you can't be sucked down. But in this, you can be pulled through a storm drain. That's the scary thing. And suddenly, like, you can be in a split second from the street into a sewer.
Yeah. So we meet Pennywise and you get his voice is sort of, it's meant to be like kind of a Brooklyn accent as opposed to, you know, later Bill Skarsgård, this got this sort of old timey thing going on. But big difference here, and Georgie is definitely dead in this version. So, because later on, it's an interesting thing because he's definitely dead rather than sort of missing. Whereas in 2017 and 2019, the parents know he's dead, but his brother isn't, you won't have it kind of thing.
Yeah, that's because in this one, which we find out in dialogue, which I remember that dialogue, and it makes it even worse when they basically say his arm was torn clean off.
Yeah, because they couldn't show it because it's telly.
Yeah. But so you know that if they know that, though, they found the body, whereas obviously in 2017, he gets pulled into the storm drain completely, so the body disappears.
Yeah, we should talk about this, but you see him crawling away, don't you, with no arm? Yuck.
Do you want a weird connection that I found? Yeah. That it's probably just me. There's a connection between the start of this and Georgie's death and the start of Jaws the Revenge.
Really?
Because both movies start with a younger brother in a yellow raincoat who initially gets attacked to their arm ripped off before meeting their end in a watery grave.
Yep.
Jaws 4 and It 1990 start the same way.
Wow. Very good.
Wow. Hmm. Okay.
Should have paired it with Jaws the Revenge.
That would have been a fun one, wouldn't it? So then we're going to meet Adult Ben, played by John Ritter, talking about being fat as he's getting off with someone. And he really wasn't.
Wait, just one last thing on the Georgie scene, only because it's one of the most important scenes in the movie. So Tim Curry says, when he's acting with a little kid called Tony Dakota in that scene, and he said in an interview, this was at a Comic-Con kind of thing recently, he said, I felt so sorry for that kid because when I'm in the drain and I'm like, they all float down here, the kid went, Tim, you're scaring me.
Oh, no.
Tim Curry goes, I'm sorry, but that's what I'm meant to be doing.
Do you want your equity card or not, Tony?
You're supposed to be scared, so we're quids in already.
Why didn't anybody tell Tony what was going to happen? Can we go to the playground? No, this is kind of a playground, Tony, so you just have to say a few things and then Mummy will get some money and we'll all go home.
There's an alternate history sequel called Georgie, a short film.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it.
No, I've heard about it. I didn't watch it. So we're talking about memories and like Ben remembers being bullied by Henry and being in love with Bev. We get the poem. The poem is super important. So your hair is winter fire, January embers. My heart burns there too. She's a brunette. I mean, this gets fixed later on. I think, would it have hurt to put some low lights on her hair? I don't know. It's cute, but it doesn't work as well as it does in 2017, which I think is a bit of a shame. And we meet young Eddie in this flashback as well. And so the kids, you know, they're sweet. They're talking about cartoon characters rather than later where it's all wanking and fucking each other's moms. They're talking about whatever. They are cute kids. They are the Stand By Me kids a little bit.
We also see the Barons for the first time early on when we meet young Ben, don't we?
Yeah.
And he sees his dad standing in the Barons. I think this is one thing the 1990 version gets right so much better than the 2017 version, because that whole set of the entrance to the sewers and that giant marsh in front of it feels ominous. It feels isolated. Damn it. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's like the equivalent of the ominous like nature of the Overlook Hotel, but it's not far off. It's just that shot that keeps being repeated of it in the distance. Magnificent.
It's because of the juxtaposition, isn't it? It jars your brain, because in the later versions, that's a house on a street. It's a horrible house, but it's a house on a street.
Exactly.
This looks like a castle in a marsh, which doesn't make any sense. And then the Overlook's the same. You know, you've got this wilderness and then a spotless hotel. So, yeah, I get that.
And we talk about Stephen King sort of doing the same things over and over again this month. And certainly when Henry Bowers and his Greaser gang show up, it's straight out of Stand By Me.
Yeah. Mm.
And sometimes they come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That scene where the corpse comes out of the lake, that's quite funny as well, because that was apparently the biggest problem ABC had, because they were like, the corpse, you know, this is, it can't have any meat on it.
Yeah, they said it has to be dry.
Yeah, they were like, they said it can't be American Werewolf in London. It can be Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
It must be a dry corpse.
And so they couldn't have any meat on it, but they were allowed to hang seaweed off it. If it was going to be wet, no meat. Wet corpse, no meat. Dry corpse, meat. Wet corpse, no meat.
Actually, let's have a break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This is Detective Abberline.
Hearing you, Abberline. Go ahead.
We've got the body of a male on Durwood Street, Whitechapel, just behind the tube. A Mark Allen Nichols. His throat has been cut, a stab wound below his shoulder blade, and,
Continue, please, Detective.
Yeah, she's cut off his knob and put his bollocks in the recycling bins.
Stack presents a thrilling new audio fiction.
She cut his throat, unbollocked the guy, and decocked him for good measure.
The body of a man brutally murdered in Whitechapel was discovered this morning.
That was Jackie's way. Evil, bloodthirsty, sexually explicit, and just, yeah, just bloody horrible, really. Step into the scene. Me, yours truly, moi, that's, me, lead detective, Freddie Abberline of Scotland Yard.
There is a man next to us who has been brutally murdered and dismembered.
We'll go and find his member then. Jesus Christ. Oh, but we've kept his AirPods in, I see. What's he listening to? Death metal? Zombie Nation?
Follow me as I hunt the most vicious serial killer known to man. Good Lord, she stuffed his eye sockets with his own bollocks.
Jackie the Ripper. The infamous Whitechapel murders. Retold. By the makers of The Offensive. Available now on all podcast platforms.
Sorry, Sally, I got your shoes. Ah, oh, it's my Wagamama from earlier. Let's have a closer look.
Looks like noodles.
Nope, him.
Jackie the Ripper. Hold on to your bollocks.
Sorry, I couldn't think of anything fun to say. There's just so much to do.
Yeah, Bart Mixon, you mentioned him already, the special effects guy. Just a weird connection with Pet Sematary that we did last week.
Yeah.
that he wanted, he said, I wanted to have done more on that because he did a bit of work on that. And it's a scene that we didn't talk about. You know, where the demon head comes out towards.
I kind of forgot until I read the Bart Mix interview where he's like, they had Judd's head or something.
Yeah,
like,
they had Judd's head on it, which when you watch, you're like, that makes no sense. Yeah. It was meant to be a demon's head.
Well, that's because that's why I thought Judd was already dead because he's appeared as a monster.
Exactly. Yeah. It was interesting.
That is interesting. So adult Bev, she's doing great as a designer. Oh no, wait, her partner is a dick. They have the worst, scariest kiss I've ever seen. It's really, really chilling. But
he's a good bastard.
Yeah, he is. The bit that it's always a very easy trope to be like, wear your hair like that. No, I don't want to wear my hair like that. So she throws hair cream at him, I think.
Yeah. I wrote pot of hair gel.
Yeah. And then she's off to Derry. And then in another flashback, we meet Richie, who's annoying in 1960 and 1990 and 2017 and massively pulls it back in 2019. But it's basically fucking annoying for three sections of this whole thing.
Thank God for Bill Hader.
Oh, my God. Thank God. Thank God. And the kids, like you say, they're building a dam down by the Barrens, which it couldn't be further away from what happens in one and two. But obviously, we'll get to that. So then we get some of the big sort of scaring the kids moments. So Bev is in the bathroom and she sees that red balloon come up through the plug hole. I really like this because I think it's so simple. Like later on, it is scary, but it just gets so overwrought. Whereas this big balloon inflating and then exploding full of blood, just the simplicity of it is more scary.
I don't know. I think partly because I was one of those kids. Remember when you had to shower communally after peeing?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So I used to fucking hate that.
I was thinking about this. That is a massive thing to have to do, because until the very first day you shower communally at school, you've always washed on your own.
Yes.
And then there's no prep for it. No one talks to you about it in the same way they talk about the birds and the bees. They just suddenly, one day they go, right, everyone in the showers, and you're surrounded by other naked children and
horrible.
Penises. Like for the first time in your life.
And the teachers, don't forget. Our teachers used to stand there and watch. I don't know what for, and I'm not saying there's anything in it, but that's also deeply uncomfortable.
Well, before Charlie Chuckle was it's that scene where Eddie's in the shower on his own, and the bit, like we were talking about the storm drains, it's the bit where Pennywise is down in the plug hole, and you sort of aren't that scared because he's in the plug hole, and it's the moment he bends the rules of reality and just pushes it aside and climbs out. And it's that removal of sort of the basic physics of the world that protect you, that you're suddenly like, that's fucking terrifying that he can climb out of a drain that size.
Yeah.
It scared the shit out of me.
Again,
and it looks cool.
Because I was thinking about what we were talking about, the impossible window I keep thinking about in The Shining, because you're messing around with the laws of physics. Obviously in The Shining, it's in your subconscious, but here, that would, you know, that is terrifying that you've got, your brain be like, he's in the plug, this is not great. But then once he breaks those rules, anything's possible. Mm. It's very scary. And also, like you say, school showers are the fucking worst thing in the world.
Genuinely, I don't think they should. Do they still do them?
I don't know.
It shouldn't be allowed.
No, I don't think it should be allowed. I don't get it.
Anyway. They still do that at gyms. I know you've probably been to a gym for a while, Alex.
I don't know what that is, Chris.
But you're choosing to do it as a grown-up, but you can go home, can't you, and have a shower. And
It was weird at the swimming baths, Fernville swimming baths in Leeds. Sure. The men's showers were communal. Female showers, individual showers.
It's because we can't be near each other. We can't help ourselves, so we have to be separated. That's what it's like in there.
Because when I was like 4 or 5 years old and my mum didn't let me in, like she took...
Classic Al.
Stuff.
Classic Al.
Stuff for the memory bank.
Did I tell you I got bollocked in a change room the other day for taking Marshall in, who is 6, by the way, and someone told me off and threatened to grass me up to management, and I was like, I fucking will have you, like... Was a bad
girl fight in the showers.
I know, I was a bad, scary mum. I am a bad, scary mum sometimes. I was like, you fucking, no, I didn't say fucking, you what? But how old? So you did.
I was, as I just said, I think about 4 or 5 maybe. I definitely was on the cusp of 6, but I wasn't young. I wasn't old enough to be like, this is weird.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just, this is fine. I change in the female changing rooms where the shower, because I could shower on my own.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that's ideal.
So the first time you see an older man's penis and they're a stranger, it's
a big moment.
It's a big moment.
do you
know what I mean, Chris?
He's a sports guy. He thinks
exactly.
We're being ridiculous.
I know he does.
It's all part of it. It's half the reason he does it.
It's just I can feel his face being like, ugh.
He's like, oh, fucking toughen up, guys.
Why are you frightened of dicks?
There's enough of them around you, coming at you like a swarm. What is it? Is it a swarm of dicks?
Yeah, a murder of dicks. So in this flashback, Richie sees a werewolf in the basement of the school. The werewolf actually looks quite cute. I didn't have any problem with
this
it.
This is a bit rubbish, this bit.
But I think the point of that is he announces it to the school and he embarrasses himself. And that's his scare, isn't it? Like, he makes it difficult.
And the smoking guy from X-Files is the head teacher.
I know.
But it's a big part of the book where some of the monsters were from the movies they were seeing, because so much of Stephen King is influenced by the movies of the 50s. And yeah, that was I was a teenage wolfman, which we'll get into on Thursday.
And then
I've got a question.
Go.
You know, we meet Richie Tozer as an adult around now.
Yes.
So he's doing racist jokes in 1990about Godzilla with fake glasses.
Yep.
Are we meant to, at this stage, think Richie's over the hill in terms of his material? Because someone does sort of go,
that's a good question.
Your material's a bit old. But then he is really being celebrated and the audience are loving it. So there's a bit later on where we'll come to this, but I don't think it's very clear whether...
He's a successful...
Well, I feel like the point across all the versions of it is that they're unusually successful.
Mm.
That everyone that got out of Derry is doing very well in their field. So I think he's supposed to be doing quite well.
Okay.
But maybe he's racked with self-doubt and...
I thought, possibly reading too much into it, he was doing well, but he hadn't stretched himself. So he was like relying on the sort of easy laugh, which is not the most sophisticated laugh, by sort of punching down. And he could do better.
So I'll tell you, I might as well do it now, why I think this. Because, you know, the bit in the library scene where he meets Pennywise as an adult when he returns to Derry and the balloons all start floating down?
Mm-hmm.
And that Prince Albert joke that I did at the top, and I never got that. I'd never got that as a kid.
No.
I had to look it up even now.
To be sure,
For the first time in my life, I actually get that joke. So Prince Albert, in case you don't know, is tobacco that used to come in a can. And that's why, do you have Prince Albert in a can? Was like a prank that people used to do on phone calls and stuff. So that's the gag.
Right.
And then there's the refrigerator. Ma'am, is your refrigerator running? I suddenly realised that's him, Pennywise, mocking Richie for having really fucking old jokes.
Oh, okay.
That I'd never realised before.
That's great,
which is why I think he is meant to be like over the hill or not funny anymore or using old jokes, because those are really old, staid jokes that Pennywise uses in that moment.
And I only understood the stuff about the success when it's said explicitly towards the end of this one, because... I didn't really, you know, Bev is doing well in a career, but her home life is terrible. Richie's unhappy. It didn't seem like they were all completely smashing it. In their field maybe, but not, and I know that's the point, like not in their life, but I didn't quite get that until I was told it.
Yeah, because there's the line in the 2019 version where Bill Hader and Eddie have that exchange where he goes, I don't write my own material. He goes, I fucking knew it.
This was the same year as Goodfellas, though, and I was really impressed with that tracking shot they do of Richie when he's going onto stage
from
backstage.
Nice. Yeah, it's like, cute.
There's some real craft for a TV movie. I think there's some beautifully shot sequences.
But yeah, definitely.
This cost in 1990 $11 million to make, though. It's 2017, chapter one. Cost $35 million in 2017. So only like, what, $25 million more than this. And that's, you know, what, 30 years later nearly.
Yeah. The rock fight. Now, I have read the book, but I'd forgotten about the rock fight. And from doing some research, I believe in the book it's a bit more of a bigger deal. Like it's an apocalyptic rock fight. Whereas this just, it establishes that Mike can join the gang and that they can best Henry, but it doesn't feel like this huge, it just feels like a set piece rather than something that might shift the narrative in a meaningful way, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was just them. This is where they sort of band together with Mike for the first time and look after him. And it's sort of that it's the completion of the Losers Club. They're all down together for the first time.
I love the fact that Bev gets like bonked by a rock and then Ben runs down. And he's like, not the woman! Like, how dare you?
There may be a romance with us in the future when I'm hotter.
And then so Mike's in the gang and then we find out because of Mike that it... has been around since at least the 1700s. And this is one of my favourite bits, when they're looking at the old black and white photo of like Main Street and Pennywise is somersaulting down the photo.
Mm.
It's just brilliant.
It's great. And I love the history. And I do think the new version does the history better and simultaneously worse in some way. Because I wish there was more of the history in this.
Yeah.
I'd love to know more about like what Pennywise was and where he came from.
Yeah, and just looked different maybe and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, because he talks about this sort of, when you sort of hear these stories, I don't know why it works so well when like young Mike Hanlon is going, you know, 250 settlers just completely vanished. He delivers it so well and you're like, what is that? What happened?
Yeah.
That sort of ominous history of Derry is great.
Yeah. And so we meet adult Stan. Now, adult Stan has got a great life because his partner finds him attractive. She tries to bring him a beer when he's in the bath. And I was like, that be still my heart. Mm. Like, if you want to get me, knock, knock, I'm busy. Have you brought me a beer? Oh, that's lovely. Thank you so much. You're going to say, why am I busy?
I get that. I doubt it'd be a beer. It'd be one of your crazy, like, what are they called? Jet pilot cocktails.
I mean, there is summer drink, but I appreciate the thought. Yeah. Mm.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay.
you're the professional.
And then the kids are down in the sewer. So that's this fucking psycho Henry. Like, I do struggle a bit with Henry. I remember him from the book, and it's very important in the book. In every version that I've watched of this, in parts one and two, and two parts of the miniseries, Henry doesn't quite do it for me.
Really?
I find it distracting. Apart from when his hair turns white. So that's a brilliant moment.
The actor, Jared Blanchard, who plays the young Henry Bowers in this, is, I think, fantastic. I'm surprised he hasn't done more. The heir of menace that kid gets off. I remember watching this and he was every school bully I ever knew in one person. I think he's great.
He's great at that. It's just, if you're looking at this ginormous book and you're trying to condense it down, you've got a bunch of kids going into a sewer to kill a murderous clown. So when a bully's like, I'm going to go in too, you're like, okay, that's important to you, but it's not as big a threat as the clown.
Yeah, but he's not there to serve the purpose. They're barely unaware that he's even really there. It's because we need to see what it can do.
Yeah, I need people to die that aren't the kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I would collapse those characters.
Of course you would.
Yeah, I would.
Of course you would. It really works for me. And this scene. So, watching it now as an adult, I obviously wasn't as scared by as much as what I was scared by as a kid. The bit that still petrifies me, and I don't know why, is that POV shot of the thing coming along the pipes. Mm. And it's the sound design, and it's the light, and it's the fact that suddenly it isn't a clown, but you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's something. And the lights under the grates as it's nearing one of Bower's gang, and then like, and the way Belch gets sucked into
that
pipe.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
That image stayed with me for years afterwards. The way he just his body contorts,
folds in,
folds backwards. I hated it. Those POV shots of the real it, the creature.
Yeah.
Which is why Stan kills himself, isn't it? Because he sees the form behind the clown. He sees what it is and he looks into its deadlights.
Yeah.
And that's the first time you hear the word deadlights.
Yeah, it is good. I mean, I haven't seen all these versions for the first time. That the tube with the lights and belts and he's like, that's I think it's the scariest bit.
It's fucking terrible.
Just because it's so simple as well, it's so basic. Like, but I think it works a lot better.
And it works because you don't reveal the creature, which we'll come to at the climax. Yeah.
So look, you're talking about the deadlights. And so the kids at this point, they see it, but with this sort of fleshy abdomen as it passes over them and they see the deadlights. And they defeat it as Pennywise with their belief that they can. They've got these silver bullets and they've got an inhaler, which Eddie, you know, talks about as battery acid. So, right, let's get into this now. Okay, this is big.
Well, let's do his brilliant, brilliant line where he goes, I am the eternal. I am the eater of worlds and of children. Specific Gartra requirements.
Just in case they weren't eaten during the eating of the world and you managed to jump off the world, you should know. I also have dessert, children.
If you're in a space shuttle
for instance,
and manage to get off the world I've eaten, I will then come for you.
Because I am.
And I'll also eat you because you're children.
And it's that thing that...
And you're in space, so you'll also float.
It's that thing that King comes back to again in Dr. Sleep, though. He also says that they taste better when they're afraid.
Yeah.
That said, in this film and in Thursday's film, so
there's a line in the book which I do not believe did not make it into either like 8 hours of like movies, which is where Pennywise actually talks about why he scares the kids before he eats them, and he says it's like salting the meat.
Your mate. Mm.
What a great line!
It's a great line.
Get that in there.
Yeah, get rid of Henry. No, I'm only joking. So let's just get into all of this because I'm doing the first part, I'll talk about the book. So the ending is very different to the book because ABC execs were not sold on the way the book ends, because the book ends with the two battles taking place at the same point in the book. So the narratives converge as you're sort of splitting between the times. And I'll deal with what we got and what we didn't get when we do the adults and the spider. So just put a pin in that for now.
Done.
Okay. However, the kids have defeated it. So in the book, right, they're wandering the tunnels and they get a little bit lost because they are losing their connection with each other and the connection that's got them this far. Mm-hmm. So Beverly suggests in the book that they regain this connection by each of them having sex with her.
Yep.
So a consensual, in massive quote marks, orgy. And they all lose their virginity to Bev. And she's got this fear of sex and womanhood that's the thing with her period. And she's going to like gang bang her fears away. A big from me, obviously. And then the boys cross their threshold to adulthood. And then they're all bound together with this act, right?
So I got the text that from the book.
Okay.
Yeah. I have an idea, Beverly said quietly. In the dark, Bill heard a sound that he could not immediately place. A whispery little sound, but not scary. Then there was a more easily placed sound. A zipper. What, he thought, and then he realised what. He was undressing. For some reason, Beverly was undressing.
Okay. She's such a predator.
But the thing is, so King has gone on record about this whole thing. And he's sort of...
Kind of, isn't he? I feel like it's a bit wishy-washy what he said about
So this is what he said, and we can discuss whether it's wishy-washy or not. He says, I wasn't really thinking in 2013 of the sexual aspect of it. Times have changed since I wrote that scene, and there is now more sensitivity to those issues. He then adds to that, I'd just like to add that it's fascinating to me there's been so much comment about that single sex scene and so little about the multiple child murders. That must mean something, but I'm not sure what. That is a bit wishy-washy. Yeah.
I mean, in a sense, he's saying he's fine with it to this day, so...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of thoughts and feelings I have about this. I mean, first of all, I understand the point of it. I understand he wants the kids to cross a threshold. I understand he wants them to be close to each other in a way that they've never done before. But is he that also, I think it's a little bit lazy because it's like you only become an adult once you've lost your virginity. And I don't think most people do feel like that. So that's bullshit. And there's also another way to do the same thing. And also, why is it all girl on boy? That's a very basic thing. Why is there not more boys with boys? Like, why not?
I mean, sure,
because she's literally a semen repository. I mean, that's not very good, is it?
Yeah, I certainly didn't feel like an adult after losing my virginity.
No.
I felt like an adult after I had a communal shower after PE. And I think that should have been the moment.
And you saw all those dicks.
Bill heard a sound. It was water running. Suddenly he found himself undressing. So was Eddie.
I just don't think it does it. Like, you lose your virginity and you're like, okay, I don't feel like a grown-up. Sex is part of being a grown-up for good reason, Stephen King. But... it's not the thing, I don't think. It's something else.
I think it's the connection between them. I think I he was going for these kids being connected, sure. Like and you know, and that's what it was. You know.
There are other ways of doing it, though.
It's a different time.
It's the most fun way to unify a group of people, though, is to have them
all
shagged.
It's the quickest, I guess.
Yeah, well.
Especially if it's the first time.
Actually, now you've said that, how long is she on her back for? Like, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes,
on
tops.
On her back? They might have done it stood up, cowboy style. Who knows? Reverse cowboy. I don't even know. I once picked up a copy of Moore magazine and then put it down because I was embarrassed in the dentist surgery.
Because of reverse cowboy?
Because of the sex scene of the month drawing.
It's position of the month.
Oh, whatever. It's sex scene of the month. Sorry, that was something I pitched to them.
Fuck these drawings. But the thing is as well, you know, I think Stephen King is a little bit obsessed with tunnels because in the book... the Derry Library's got an adult library and a kids' library and they're connected by a tunnel. So to him, you go through a tunnel and you pop out the other side and you're a grown-up. So it's whatever. So then, having dealt with that, they come out of the sewer. They make their promise to come back if it ever does. Okay, so now we're into like the second section, like the grown-up section. So Stan has died by suicide in the bath.
Shocking scene as a kid. I remember
that. Oh, yeah.
It works so well, though, in terms of part of the story, it's like that is how scary what they're about to face.
Exactly what I wrote down. It really, that is one of the most chilling moments, maybe the most chilling moment, that
they
it's that frightening
job.
That you have to die.
Because he's so happy. There's no suggestion that his life is a mess or anything. Like, he's got this really lovely life and he's only on screen for like 5 minutes.
It's also a bit of a stretch that he's some kind of sort of sex maniac where he's wearing a bow tie, reading a newspaper, and suddenly she's like, duh, 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 and he's like,
I quite like it because it's like, it takes all sorts, doesn't
it? Yeah, I do. You're right. I was a bit judgy.
Yeah.
A little bit judgy. Yeah, but that shot of him in the bath is the thing, is one of the scenes that stayed with me.
It's the it on the wall. It's it is. Because the pristine tiles and the yeesh.
And they sound, they genuinely seem so happy.
They did, but it's just too much. You just can't face it. So now there's six of them. And then for some reason, Mike, the only person of colour, is written out of the narrative, robbing him of the story that he helped create. But more on that later. So, best bit here, because all the scaring is all for good and old Mrs. Kirsch and all the rest of it. But did you notice, it's such a little thing, but I rewound this moment several million times. Mm-hmm. So we're back with Audra for no good reason, who is Bill's wife, and she's a movie star. And she's been threatened by her, I don't know if it was a producer or a director.
Well, yeah, he needs to die.
It's amazing. So he's basically saying to her, you can't go after Bill because Bill's gone to Derry and I need you here to be in my movie. And he's being a bit like, hey, well, and like, as in your husband's away, maybe we should shag. And she's like, how dare you? But it's all pretty fine. And then he just turns around and says, and I quote, don't turn a friend overnight into a violent enemy ready to crucify you at any cost.
Big statement. Big statement.
I thought I'd misheard.
No, he's a poet, just an awful person, but
I
a poet.
That. How quickly did that escalate? She could be like, sorry, I mean, I haven't even said I'm going to go. It's just an amazing moment because you don't see him again. She's not like, whoa. She's like, I'm going to go. And then goes.
When Bev does visit Mrs. Kirsch's house,
yeah.
The way that elderly woman drinks the tea, though.
Oh, that's good.
Just so you know, I drank some tea like that as a joke on my Sunday night after watching it. Gets a laugh. If you suddenly start drinking tea, people are like, what the fuck is going on? What's he doing?
It's a good moment.
Thank you, Mrs. Kirsch.
So we're off to the Chinese restaurant for the big reunion. Bev faints on arrival. Not good.
Remember I said this about Jesse in Gerald's game? Someone who's feigning being okay just before they faint is a new emotional beat for me that I've never noticed before. When Jesse says hi to a rescue, she goes, hi, and then collapses. And this she goes, what a beautiful bunch of guys, and then faints. Right. I was like, it gets me going. Like,
yeah, it triggered an angry response to me. And I was like, why am I so angry about this? And I remembered, do you remember when we did Castaway?
Yes.
Tom Hanks comes home. Who is the woman that he left? I can't remember.
Helen Hunt.
Is it? So she's got all these emotions. She's moved on, all the rest of it. And she sees Tom Hanks and she's a brilliant actor. And then she's going to have a big moment. She's like, but you left me. And instead they were like, she faints. Unreal. Fuck off.
Have you never fainted?
I have fainted. But
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but not at moments of...
Mark brought you a beer once in the bath.
I nearly drowned. I was like, well, I asked for a jet pilot. You've brought me a Budweiser.
What happened?
When I fainted, yeah. I just got really hot and fainted. It's really boring.
Have you fainted?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, I fainted once in... It's so embarrassing. I had such a shit school life. I fainted once in assembly because I got too hot. Ugh. I think we were singing Christmas carols and I was really far back, like in the seating. And I just was like, it got so hot. And then I just passed out. And I just remember shouts going up and the Christmas carol was interrupted. I remember Mr. Turnock, the PE teacher who I hated most, was the one who like lifted me out and took me to Matron. I think that made me angry.
Over his shoulder.
Literally, I bet he loved it as well. Hero moment for him, an idiot briefcase kid. Fucking fire lifted out.
Did you have a briefcase?
Shut up.
Yeah. I was going to tell you, as you know, when we went to see...
I made another girl faint in assembly, though.
You made a girl faint?
Yeah,
get
here
you.
We go. Now we go.
Did you make her purr as well?
No, I had a nosebleed. I had a nosebleed and I just did not want to draw attention to myself. Because I was like, oh, fuck, your nose is bleeding. I used to get loads of nosebleeds as a kid. My nose was bleeding. And I was like, I was trying to sort of like...
Stuff
like tissue back up, hold my head back. And it had clotted enough. Yeah. And I thought, oh, my God, it's clotted.
Oh, did you pull out the big clot? And like, oh, I love a big one.
But it was about 3 inches long, like this big
classic.
Bloody
like
slug.
A slug, yeah.
And Amy Trichler looked and went, oh, and fainted next
mate.
To me. And I was like, oh, my God, this is worse than if I just bled out.
Wow, it really was the in-betweeners for you, wasn't it?
It really was.
Yeah.
I love those big clots.
I
just like try and make them.
That's weirder. What?
I had a lot of nosebleeds.
Did you?
Should have just had my nose cauterized, but I was like, no, this is too much, too enjoyable.
too enjoyable.
I can get out of stuff here. Sorry, I gotta go. Gotta go.
Yeah.
Oh, you've made me lose my place. That's disgusting.
I once had a nosebleed on TV, on live TV. And, well, the worst part was, this is completely true. The worst part was it was for something called Carling Live 24, where they did 24-hour gigs over the course of the night. So this is only going back about 15 years. And it was about 4 a.m. And I was just on TV, like interviewing some fucking band or something. And my nose started bleeding. And I'm just going to leave this to you, Steve Jones, or whoever was sitting next to me. And I ran off because it was 4 a.m. Every fucking person looked at me like, oh, all right.
Oh,
then.
No.
Yeah. Okay, sure, you were sure. Just a nosebleed out of the fucking blue at 4 a.m, working for 24 hours. It wasn't. Don't look at me like that.
I don't care how you get your nosebleeds. I'm not judging you.
Stress.
It's stress. You're a very stressed child. That makes me feel a bit sad for you.
Thanks.
Where am I up to now? Oh, so Bev's fainted. That's not good. Pennywise taunts them with creatures in the fortune cookies. I did read that. So Tim Reed, who plays Older Mike, said they weren't allowed to know what was in the cookies. So the director was like, you will not know. And so they had like little props like that sort of baby bird thing and stuff like that to really freak them out. I think, and the baby bird is very scary. Having just moaned about Henry, who I don't actually think is completely needed, I think you could keep the narrative much tighter. You've got a psychotic clown. You don't need a bully. But Tim Curry in the moon outside the psychiatric unit, like the Mighty Boosh, is such an amazing thing to see.
Well, now you've said the Mighty Boosh, it's not. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I agree in both movies. Adult Henry is a kind... I like Kid Henry, but Adult Henry basically turns up and goes, I'm going to... Oh, you've killed me.
Oh, I got killed.
Yeah, that didn't last long. But the Rottweiler head on top of the long clown neck...
Oh, yeah. That's
I've
good.
Told you that before. That's probably that's in my top three scariest moments.
Dog clowns.
It's the way the guard just keeps looking up and his long neck, and then it's like, oh, oh, oh.
That's because you got bitten by a dog.
It is because I got bitten by a dog.
So the kids as adults, they're in this hotel, and then it's like, we're going to do this when the sun comes up. We're going to tackle Pennywise.
Do you just to go back, do you not feel sorry for the people who run that Chinese restaurant?
Yeah.
Because that is the worst guest booking you've
but
ever
also,
had.
Also, in both versions, they are a little bit privileged dicks about it. Like, the poor woman's like, is everything all right? And they're smashing the place up, screaming.
It's the bit. So this is the bit where Richie Tozer goes from being our guy, because he's like, tequila, and I'm like, yeah. Richie Tozer, legend. But then in the next scene, he's got the fish head off the plate doing a half-assed puppet show, which is disrespectful. And they cut to the waitress sort of going, the fuck are you doing?
We've cooked you this food.
Yeah.
Could you please stop playing with the food? Yes, I agree with you. And so the adults are doing a bit of soul searching in the hotel, which I did like, because a difference between this version and the later versions is the kids are clear that there's something wrong with the town itself, which I don't feel that gets much of a mention in 2017 and 2019. And I think it's better.
Really? I think it's much more prevalent in 2017, 2019.
Really?
Yeah, because I'll tell you why. It's the fact that the TV show itself is talking to people. It's a really subtle moment, but there's a TV show going, go and play in the sewers, children. It's fun to play in the sewers.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
You're suddenly like, this is insane that the town like is broadcasting this show. And you get the feel that Derry is much more of an evil entity as a place in the new one.
And also someone says to one or two of the other, I can't remember who's doing this explanation, but none of the gang, the club, have kids, which I didn't realise. And then once I realised that, I thought that was really eerie and sad and a shame for them. If they've either decided that they don't want to pass it on or they don't want to ruin another child's life or something horrible and very melancholy like that. But anyway, Pennywise is in the hotel, and the best line of the whole thing, he says to Ben, kiss me, fat boy, which is obviously the best line, and he's not even fat.
I also, there is, although, you know, it's non-PC, but that's Pennywise, where he's like, but Billy boy. That was funny.
That's awesome. So a bit of a problem here. They're running around the hotel. The adults they sort of bottle it. They're like, we're not going to do this. And then I think it's grown up Billy's like, no, for our sanity, we must do it. So they have this sort of the moment where they lose it and they're like, do you know what, we're not. And then they're like, no, the call to action, we're going to do it. But Mike is in hospital because Henry attacked him.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing that Mike has put together, he doesn't get to be in. That's really bad. It's piss poor.
Yeah, I think he's really undervalued here, Mike. And I think he is in the other films we do on Thursday as well.
Yeah.
I think Mike gets short shrift all across this.
It made me feel very uncomfortable that he is a person of colour, and then they're like, but you can spend this time in bed. It's like he's done all that, even if taking that out of the equation, he's done all this stuff to get the gang back together, and he doesn't even get to go and have the big showdown.
I mean, speaking completely personally, I'd rather be in a hospital bed than go back into the fucking sewers to fight it.
Yeah, you'd be running at Henry. Stab me!
Henry. Do me!
As they're in the sewers, Bill wants to rescue Audra, who was captured by Pennywise, even though I think I saw Bill get off with Bev in the Chinese restaurant. So I did query the strength of their relationship.
Well done for mentioning that. That is a very, very passionate kiss that he gives her.
They do get off with each other, don't they?
Audra,
is that right? Yeah.
No wonder you wanted to go to Maine on your... Don't follow me, Audra. Do not come to Maine. I won't be kissing anyone.
Bringing that. Can you say you're going to crucify her? You have to really talk to her like that, otherwise she won't get it.
So this dinner is cold.
And so then we're in the inner sanctum of its cheap-ass looking lair. So now we're going to talk a lot about the ending and about the spider and all the rest of it. Are you ready? Because there's quite a lot here. So Tim Curry, he didn't like the spider. He said, I was very disappointed by the ending when I turned into a rather unconvincing spider. Tommy Lee Wallace said, we laboured long and hard designing a spider that was beefy and muscular. It looked great in the drawings and as a clay model. But when the SFX team unpacked the full-size spider, what they assembled was very different. Not chunky at all. That's a pretty big change to have sprung on you a few hours before you're supposed to shoot. I don't mind saying I was hugely upset and considered scrapping the whole thing and starting from scratch. But there was no time. The show had to go on. So he didn't like it. Apparently, you weren't even supposed to see the spider's face. It was an actual error with the person that did the colour grading. They got the timing wrong. So you weren't ever supposed to see the full face, which obviously breaks like a big monster rule. And the kids, the actors, called it the Alaskan King Crab Monster because that's what it looks like.
It does.
So what do you think about the spider?
Yeah, well, I don't think it matters what I think. This is very modernised. But what did you think as a kid? Because I heard that this was really frightening. And
no,
it wasn't.
Even as a kid, I remember being disappointed by this. And this is crazy. It's so weird to sort of think back. Because as a kid, you're like, a stop-motion spider monster? That ticks loads of boxes. Mm. But I think it's because Pennywise himself has been so terrifying throughout that the idea that suddenly it's just this... I mean, that's the point. It has to take a physical form for them to kill it. But you were just like, that's it?
Yeah.
It's just a monster? And it's the absence of Tim Curry at that point.
Yeah, 100% agree. I wrote down, why replace Tim Curry with a puppet spider? Mm. You know, they obviously wanted to adapt the book, but they changed lots of other things. If you haven't got the budget, you know, you've got him there. He can do the job.
Yeah. I mean, Tommy Lee Wallace didn't read the book until he had the job because he didn't want it to inflect his interpretation, but he said when he did get to the end, he was disappointed by the book being, you know, a spider in the book because he was like, I'm not scared of spiders. So.
Well, I've got the ending to the book here, which is slightly different. It's worth hearing though. So they talk about it is a trans-dimensional being, but it does appear as a giant spider. Bill and Richie enter its mind through the ritual of Chud, but they get lost in it. Eddie injures it by spraying the asthma medication down its throat, but it bites off Eddie's arm, killing him. It runs away to tend to its injuries. King's novel famously then gets a little bit out there because Pennywise's enemy throughout time and history is a giant turtle named Maturin.
Yeah.
And I remember reading that in the book and it's sort of they're inhabiting this trans-dimensional space when they meet Maturin, the giant turtle.
Yes.
Pennywise's nemesis, brand new addition to the book, not mentioned before, Maturin. And I just could not stop thinking about the Terry Pratchett Discworld novels.
Yeah.
And I, that's what I had in my head when I read the book, and I'm like, I don't know how you'd ever hope to visualize that, but I certainly think of four elephants circling giant turtles back.
Yeah, and ABC didn't want to do that. They thought it was too intellectual. So that's why you get slingshots and inhalers and all the rest of it, rather than the ritual of Chud.
Mm.
I mean, fine.
Gary Dauberman talks when he talks about the sequel and why they didn't do that as well. He was like, I was trying to wrap my head around a giant turtle floating through space and then Bill standing in front of it. From a cinematic standpoint, I had a hard time.
It's the same as the giant squid in Watchmen, where the filmmakers just decided this will look ridiculous, this won't work, so we've got to come up with something different, something new. And I get it. You know, we're moaning about the spider. I can't imagine what the turtle would have looked like.
I, And the weird thing is, with all the budget and everything, I think the end of 2019's It Chapter 2, it suffers. It's as bad as this. I don't think either. And I don't know whether that's because King's book like is unfilmable as an ending, but it doesn't work.
I tell you, do you know, so the actual ritual is from Himalayan belief, where you're supposed to overlap your tongue with the shape-shifting evil, which is called a talus, and you bite into each other's tongue and you tell riddles, and then the one that laughs the first, despite the pain, is the loser. You could do that with a big spider.
Okay.
You can bite its tongue. Do spiders have tongues? Wait. No.
Also, I say tongue, so we're on different pages already.
What do I say?
Tongue.
What do you say?
Tongue.
Is that different?
They sound different when you say them out loud.
Tongue.
If we're going to do this, we're going to be here all day. Please stop.
I'll tell you what my problem is as well with the ending. It's the fact that the giant spider never, ever appears like a real threat. I know it kills Eddie, but the minute it kills Eddie, literally my memory of the end of It is them going, let's fucking have it. Yeah. Push it over. Kick its deadlights in. Are you kicking its deadlights? I'm going to get its heart. Grab its fucking heart. Yeah, it's dead. Brilliant.
That is the end. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
They tear it apart.
It's a fucking playground pylon. Pylon! It's so stupid.
Yeah, it is stupid. But if you want to be generous, it has brought about its own demise, because it played to me as repressed rage. And they finally got it like on the back foot kind of thing. So if it hadn't scared the shit out of them as kids, and they wouldn't have had to live with this fear for 20 years, 30 years, then they wouldn't have gone at it as hard as they did, because they're angry. So it killed itself, if you know what I mean. Maybe? Yeah,
maybe. I mean, but they haven't been angry for 20, 30 years because they haven't remembered.
Shit. That doesn't work.
No.
Fuck. Sorry, I tried.
No, it's good. I think, and you probably maybe even tried harder than King, who put a turtle in it.
And then that's it, basically. We wrap things up. Eddie's dead, but Richie's in a movie with someone who looks like him, so that's fine.
How is that?
So weird.
What a weird payoff for Eddie. It's like, don't worry, you died down there, but someone who looks a bit like you is in a movie that I will never watch because they're cowboys on people's shoulders fighting with plastic swords? What the fuck movie is this? How has Richie not changed his act despite everything that's happened?
Yeah, that's a good point. Ben and Bev, they're having a baby. When I was writing this, I just realised he's got three characters: Ben, Bev and Bill. That would drive me mad in a script. Madness. And then Mike and Bill, I'd forgotten, like, it's all very sad. Like, they're forgetting everything. They can't really remember anyone's name. Audra, who we do not care about, is a literal zombie. And then she's revived with a little bike ride.
Oh, I did get a bit tearful.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're soft. It's so ridiculous.
I think that works in the book, and I don't think it works here, because we have no real connection to Audra. We don't really care about her. And so, I
think it's Mike on his bike. Mike on Silver is quite an effective.
It's just daft,
little
isn't
moment.
It?
All right, fine. I'm just a softy, really.
You are a softy. That's as much as I'm going to do.
Wait.
What?
It ends with Tim Curry's laugh.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just great, because you're like, wait, is he not dead? Yeah. What a cruel trick to play on a kid who's like, all right, we're done. He's gone. No, he's laughing. He could still be there.
Yeah. That's it.
Well done.
Thanks. It was a lot, wasn't it? There's a lot I didn't say, but we just don't. We'd be here for many, many hours.
Yeah. Look, you know I love it, and I feel that we covered everything that I'd want to talk about.
Okay.
So.
That's
so well
your yardstick, yeah.
That's good. Always.
Yeah. What was your best scene then?
My best scene is Georgie and the drain. It's the most memorable scene from this movie. Or, as I said, if I did have a little close second, it is that POV shot of the thing coming down the pipes, electric flashes, sound, which really, really scares me.
What about you?
Georgie's death.
Yeah, storm drain, Pennywise in a storm drain, obviously. Mm-hmm. Your MVW, Chris?
Tim Curry. What I will say about it, though, is watching it really with sort of an analytical mind this time, it's just so effortless for him. It seems easy. Like, this is such a terrific performance, and he just looks like he's having a laugh.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Mm.
And you?
Tim Curry, and I've never said this before about an MVW, fact. Not even up for debate. Sorry.
Yes, mine is Tim Curry. The rest of the film, I mean, this film has scared me shitless for years without having seen it, and maybe it doesn't quite deserve it, because it's Tim Curry over delivers here, and he kind of, I thought the rest of the film was going to be more scary than it was because of him, and it isn't. What would you change, Alex?
I didn't realise this until I did a bit of research. So it is in the book, and you did touch on this. I do really need Bev's husband, Tom, to follow her to Derry. And because in the book he does, and he's trying to find out what's going on, and then he gets it, convinces him to try and kill someone or other, but then he sees the real it and he dies from shock. And I want that. I think he's such a fucking bastard at the start. And I think it would work. I think you only need him, you know, to come in and just like
get killed.
I want to see that. So that would be my main change, which actually is in King's book.
Do you think it's not in there because what's he called? Tom, the husband. He's a baddie. Pennywise is a baddie. And if Henry a baddie Bowers kills a baddie, does it cancel out the baddiness?
I think it's like you just want him gone because I think you know. I mean, maybe it would rob Bev of like the idea that she's got this new strength now and she ain't going back to him, so he can exist in the world and it doesn't even bother her. Rather than, well, he's dead, so
I can move on. Yeah. What about you, Chris?
Someone might have stolen my thunder here, but writers tend to name their characters with different letters at the beginning to make it easier when they're writing. Simple as that. And to have them called Bill, Ben and Bev was really annoying for my notes this week. And I'm sure you'll all agree. Now, Stephen King knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So he's done this on purpose, I think, because they're the love triangle. There's a connection between the three of them. He's decided I'm going to give them very similar names. But it was super annoying. Change two of those names, please. And also, give me a child orgy and a giant turtle.
But now you've just said that. So they're called Ben, Bev and Bill. So they've got one syllable, B names. Why can't the three of them have sex with each other or something? Like, why is it just one girl and six boys, and that's it? Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah, but let's make it clear, that didn't happen in this. That was in the book that King wrote.
Sorry.
And I think in literature, you know, I mean, I can be
a bit more saucy.
I read it. It's very sexy. you can describe it in a way that is, it would never come across on film. Yeah. There is, and that's why it's not here.
Yeah. Yes, fine.
What's yours, Vicky?
So I think it's very, this is a big thing because it's part of the book as well as the films, but it's really hard for me to buy that the kids would come back as adults to enact a promise they don't quite remember making. So I think you should make them remember and see that they've tried to live with it. And if maybe their life is successful because they remember. Maybe their life is a mess because they remember. But to have this sort of fleeting memory, it's a fun thing when they get that sucker punch of like, oh, now I can remember.
Yeah. Would you lose that? That's the moment. That's great. You're waiting for each of them to get that phone call at the start. That's one of the most exciting moments.
You just do some big writing where the action comes to them at a time they need it the most / need it the least. They do it for different reasons, blah, 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 blah. Lots of writing to be done. Mm. That's what I would do.
I don't know. I quite like the moment where John Ritter gets his call and he pours a massive glass of whiskey for himself and then he's clearly gone home. Also, he owns the most hideous art collection in the world, but he's gone home with a woman from a party who just loves a bit of drama, pours himself a big glass of whiskey. She goes, are you going to kill yourself?
Yeah. It's like, you'll kill yourself with this?
Come to one of our after show parties.
I don't think I will, love. Yeah, that's it.
All right then, lovely stuff. That is it. The 1990 TV miniseries done. Chris, are we doing a quiz?
Phobia quiz.
Great.
So I'll give you the phobia.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you multiple choice this time because it went so well last time we did multiple choice.
Vicky's going to win this. She knows shit like this.
I don't.
Okay.
Because I don't know Latin. Is it? They're all Latin, aren't they?
Yeah, Greek, Latin. Androphobia.
People called Andrew.
Is that fear of men, fear of robots, or fear of balls?
Fear of balls.
Robots. Fear of men from Miss Andrew?
Robots.
Correct, Vicky. It's fear of men.
I thought it was androids.
What's cynophobia? Fear of computers, fear of dogs, or fear of drums?
Fear of drums.
It's cynophobia, C-Y-N, or cynophobia.
What did you say? Computers?
Dogs or drums. He's gone drums.
I'll go computers.
It's dogs.
Oh, is it?
Really? Oh, that was dogophobia.
Oh, I should have picked ones I can pronounce. Ephebiphobia. Ephebiphobia. Is that fear of the colour green, fear of the elderly, or fear of teenagers?
Ephe.
Fear of the colour green.
Vicky?
Fear of teenagers.
Correct, Vicky.
Oh, what's
another
the
one for Vicky.
2-0. God, I told you.
Don't look over the top of the laptop. Oh, that's a bit naughty, that. Oh, I could have just told you.
Ooh.
What is genuphobia? Is it fear of knives, fear of knees, or fear of gnomes?
Fear of gnomes.
Knees.
Correct, Alex.
Yes!
One back for Alex. Fear of knees.
No one's scared of a gnome. It's so lovely.
What's Samhainophobia? Samhainophobia.
Oh, I know this.
Is that fear of Halloween, fear of Easter, or fear of Christmas?
Halloween.
Halloween.
I mean,
I think you asked us that last year.
I also think if you say, I know this, I'm probably going to copy you.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Oh, shit, I never thought. What is wrong with me? Why does my brain... Why can't I cope with this?
I've said it to you quite a lot to not say I definitely know this. All right,
oh,
last
so
one.
That's so annoying. Take that point off him because that's not...
Last one. You're leading by 1 point,
oh,
Vicky.
Fuck's sake. I can't believe I've thrown it.
So, wait, I can only draw until the tiebreaker. You might get this.
What is...
by the way, do you know this?
What is Venustraphobia? Is Venustraphobia fear of beautiful women, fear of statues, or fear of space?
Oh.
I'll say beautiful women.
Fear of statues.
It's a tie. Alex is correct. It's fear of beautiful women.
Fuck off!
There's a tiebreaker.
I wanted to see that, though!
Oh, no.
Does he know it?
No, it's the same tiebreaker question I think I've done before.
Uh-oh.
Shall I ask it again?
Yeah.
Well, there's no other option.
How many standalone novels has Stephen King published?
64.
Alex?
65.
Vicky gets it, 63.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I'm going to ask that question every week.
Thank God.
Well played, Vicky. Oh, that worked better than I could have possibly imagined.
You're right. It feels like you should have won that anyway, seeing as I did not know Halloween and you gave it to me. Well done then, Victoria. Congratulations. It's just a quiz.
Let's remember, it's just a quiz.
Just a bit of fun. Just a bit
it's
fun.
Meant to be fun.
Just fun. Just fun. Right then, next week, let's look ahead. It's Chris's choices. Next week, give us a clue.
You've seen the History Boys. Now meet the History Brats.
Nice. Nice clue. You've seen the History Boys. Now meet the History Brats. That is the clue for next week's pairing. Before then, though, we are, of course, back on Thursday to go through it, chapters 1 and 2 in one episode. We'll be back then. In the meantime, please subscribe, rate, and indeed review us if you've got the time. It's a great help, and check in with us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. Back on Thursday, talking it, chapters 1 and 2. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.